it was a lot different to what it is today.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
That's for sure.
The drought was on it, and not the drought, there was no work for anybody.
Mm.
What do they call it?
The Great Depression.
Yeah, the Depression. And I can remember families walking down the highway, then parents would be carrying swags, and the kids would be running behind, you know, and they would be heading towards Shepparton or one of those fruit growing areas.
Oh, right, where they thought there might be work.
Yeah, probably get work for so many weeks, you know.
And families, I guess, that you wouldn't expect normally to see.
Well,
in that condition,
no,
seemingly
homeless.
It was
quite common to see quite a few of them around in that time.
But you don't see that now. I mean, do you?
No, that was one of the things anyway, yeah.
Wow. What else do you remember about the world? Like,
your mother used to help those people.
Oh, yeah.
So people helped each other
used to,
out.
Yeah, they always seem to... Not actually families, but when they got a single swagman, and they seemed to let one another know where they could get a feed.
Oh, okay.
And anyway, when I come home one night or one evening, and there's a swags up against the wall of the house. And two or three kids there, Mum was feeding them all.
Wow. And do you think that was unusual for your family, or were people to help each other out?
No, there was a lot of people.
I lived up the country, and we used to have swagmen. We used to call them one swagger to walk.
One swagger to walk.
And they were looking for work, and then they were looking for something to eat.
Oh.
And that was right up past Swan Hill.
It's a different setup. I mean, you can be working in one place and, you know, for 6 months, and if you didn't like it, you could change jobs. But you couldn't in those days. If you had a job for 3 or 4 days, it was a big help.
Yeah. And so when did you two meet?
Being 1948.
1948. So how old were you, Mary, in 1948?
I was 19 and he was 20.
Oh, you were babies. But was that considered, that probably wasn't considered babies back then,
No,
was it?
That was the norm.
That's when...
And I was married at 20 and he was 21. And we've been married, 68 years this April.
My goodness. Congratulations. That's, you know, I didn't know. I knew you'd been together for a very long time. And I, again, going back to wanting to sort of extract wisdom from people that have a lot of it on particular subjects, I really wanted to explore something that I think is really important to share with myself and younger generations, is the subject of romance and love and communication.
What? We met at a dance.
That was the way people met a lot, wasn't it? So it was like local dance halls, and that's
dances.
Where you went.
But the problem now is they meet at the hotel.
Yeah.
And that's why the marriages don't last.
Yes. And so tell me why do you say that?
Well, because they get
the
drunk and different lifestyle and drugs and that, and then they go to get it together for a couple of years and have a couple of kids and then split up.
Tell me about those, because there is something that sounds really magical about those dances that you know, my mother has spoken about, that obviously was the place where people kind of met.
Yeah.
What, in terms of how often were they, what was the dress code, what was the idea behind, like, did they have bands?
Well, they usually had them every Saturday night.
Oh, every Saturday
night. Yes, every Saturday night. And when my father used to MC the dances.
Oh.
The soldiers, soldiers going away, the farewell for the soldiers.
Yeah.
And I wasn't allowed to go until I could waltz.
You weren't allowed to go to the dances
until I could waltz.
Until you could waltz.
And I waltzed at 12 and I've been going to dances ever since.
Was it extra incentive to get good at waltzing so you could go to these fun Saturday night events?
Yes. I showed him my waltz on the catching pen floor when he was shearing.
Yeah. And to say, can I go? Am I with? So what were the age group? I mean, was there an age where you were too young to go to these dances? Like, was it that sort of adult environment or what was it?
Oh, no, but it was around about 12 when the young ones were going.
So was it all ages and like...
All ages, yeah.
You didn't see them much under that age. So
no, really, you didn't see them much under that age, yeah. But that was the norm.
And was that seen as like a place where you knew that if you wanted to find a girlfriend or a boyfriend, that was the place to go?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It just happened like that.
Yeah.
We met at a dance at White Hills.
Yeah.
In Bendigo, because he was born in White Hills.
Oh, okay.
I was born in Nye West.
Okay. So how did you two see each other? What happened? Did you bump into each other on the dance floor? What happened?
Yes, he asked me for a dance one night. I'd been to the pictures and we were supposed to book in when we come home, which we used to do that, and then we'd go down to the dance where we weren't supposed to be.
Where did you see Mary? Was she standing? Was she took dancing with friends? Like, what made you notice her?
Oh, well, mostly all the girls sat on one side of the hall.
That's how the movies show it, that they're all sitting there waiting to be asked to dance.
And yes. All the boys and that would be sitting on this side of the hall and...
sitting there going, who's cute, who's...
And you'd sort of, you know, be looking along and picking out this one and that one sort of thing.
And, I mean, that's another thing. Like, in your era, you know, you had to be, if you liked the look of a girl, if you saw Mary, you had to get up and do something about it. You couldn't sit there behind, like, social media and text them. And no, you had to man up and get across the other side and ask it.
Hi, Anne. What you doing Saturday night?
Well, I guess I'm busy.
Oh, yeah? Any chance of giving him the brush off for me?
Well, of all the nerve!
I was very shy.
Were you?
And my mates and all that, they had plenty of go in them and sort of thing, and they could go up and pick up a girl pretty quick, but I used to think about it for a while.
So cute. Well, you certainly picked the right one.
Yeah, that's right.
Didn't you?
Yeah.
Did you know, like, did you have parents that kind of, like, I mean... What sort of woman did you think that you wanted to meet?
I was after a quiet sort of a woman, and a country woman.
Yeah.
And I got it.
Is she quiet as well? Is she a quiet woman?
Yeah, she is.
Is she? Yeah. Oh, God, we wouldn't have got along back then, Alan, at all.
His parents were English.
Oh.
They came out in 19, I think.
20 or something.
19.
What brought them out to Australia?
Oh, his grandfather was out here, wasn't he?
My father's father was out here, and Dad and then migrated out. Must have been a few years later on.
Yeah, because his father was in the army over there, and he was in a prisoner of war. Well, after the war, then they came out here.
Who was the prisoner of war?
My father.
Was he?
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
In Germany.
Oh, my gosh. Did he ever share those experiences with you?
No.
People didn't share experiences.
My dad was an ANZAC and he never took.
They don't. It wasn't an era that encouraged.
No, they didn't talk about it. They wouldn't talk about it.
Mm.
And you didn't ask, so that was it. Yeah.
So getting back to your early courtship, and again, you know, we now, this world that you're still living in, obviously, and hopefully will be for some time, but it's a different world in terms of meeting and dating, and I don't know whether you're familiar with Tinder and things like that. Do you know what that is?
It's entirely different.
Yeah. It is. And I think one of the saddest things, because I've grown up, you know, I mean, I'm 47, I've grown up where, you know, there was still the landline, and that's how you rang your friends.
Yeah, and well,
we wrote loads and loads of letters, and the biggest relationship I've ever had in my life, I think one of the beautiful aspects of that was that he wrote a lot, and he had beautiful handwriting, and he was a beautiful writer. And those kind of letters and the way we developed our relationship was one of the most beautiful things, if not the most beautiful thing about it.
Yes.
How did you guys communicate in those early days? Was it landlines? Was it just dropping around? How did it work?
We used to just sort of say, well, say if I'd been out, took her out to the night to the pictures or something, and I'd say, oh, what about Wednesday night? We, you know, could we go for a walk or something like that, make another date for them.
So you make the, and this is what young people would find it hard to understand, that they would never trust that you would say, okay, well, next Wednesday at 7:30, I'll meet you at such and such. That wouldn't be enough for them. To not have heard from you for a week, they wouldn't think that that arrangement still stood.
The big trouble is now the telephones, the mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to stop them taking... When they come home from school, they've got to put them in a box.
Mm.
And when they go to school, they should have to put them in a box so they're not looking at that phone all day. You go and sit in the waiting room somewhere, no one speaks to you. Once you could go there and have a good conversation with everyone.
Yeah. The sense of connection between humans and in terms of, you know, you guys have obviously lived in country towns, so that beautiful getting to know who your butcher is, or, you know, getting to see a neighbour in the waiting surgery, or just meeting someone you didn't know, all sorts of human interactions have been deleted from society.
All, you know, shopkeepers and everyone, they all knew you by name.
Mm.
And, you know, you knew who they were. And that there's a chap we met when we first came to Bendigo, which was I don't know how many years. Now he's got a shop over here, you know, and he always calls me sweetheart when he sees me and sometimes gives me a kiss on the forehead.
Oh.
And that, and that's the sort of friendship you used to have back in those days.
Yes.
But you don't get that now.
You had characters in your life, and people that made different experiences for whether you're just doing your shopping or walking down the street. That doesn't happen. It's very sad.
It's with utmost respect I am interrupting this beautiful conversation now for a moment to thank my sponsors, Freedom Aged Care. So when I decided to do this podcast series, which really came from a genuine place of feeling like the one generation in our society being talked about the least was actually the one we needed to be listening to, because these people have lived so much. So I decided to give an aged care company a go, and I chose one that I'd explored during my search to find somewhere for my dad to live. And I instantly loved what Freedom appeared to be about, which was celebrating the lives of their residents, but doing it with a really joyful touch. And I contacted a guy called Craig Flett, who's one of the family members involved with Freedom Aged Care, a guy I'd never met. And in an email, I poured my heart out on why I wanted to do this series. And to my great surprise, he instantly said he wanted to get on board. As he put it, Freedom's residents have together lived a million years of life, a fact that the company is really intensely proud of. So it's become a really beautiful, authentic union, and it's allowed me to get paid for what I love doing. And for them, hopefully it highlights their commitment to honouring the people who have led long, brave and interesting lives, and people who deserve not to be forgotten. So now, back to my wonderful guest.
Yeah, it doesn't happen now, no.
We shifted later on in life, we shifted up into the Mallee.
Mm.
And the kids, and when they came along, they all went to...
How many kids do you have?
Three.
There they are there.
Oh, which, yes, sir.
One in the Air Force.
Gorgeous bunch of people.
And one with the beard.
Yeah.
And that's my daughter, that end.
Beautiful.
Yeah, they were. And anyway, they went to the school at Canny, that's the where we shifted to.
Yeah.
And I only went there actually to help a fellow out with the harvest.
Mm.
And that was for 6 weeks, I think. It generally takes about 6 weeks.
I took over the post office and telephone exchange.
Mm.
But anyway, there for 16 years.
The job was for 6 weeks thereabouts, but I ended up stopping 16 years.
That's amazing, isn't it? And sorry, I was just going to say, you working at the post office, well, that, I mean, the post office and people that work there, and the experience of going into a post office was a really lovely thing, because well, it was the epicentre of communication. Yes. But you also communicated with the people that worked there.
Yes.
And that, I mean, obviously they still exist, but it's just an example of those important places that we all connected and we all became neighbours and we all became...
friends.
Yeah.
It was all Morse code.
Was it? Was it Morse code?
On the phone.
Yeah.
If you were on the party line, you know, three rings for S and a long and a short for something else.
What years were that? Well, so that was before phones? Is that what you mean?
No, we had phones.
Before the automatics.
They were on party lines. And there'd be three or four on the line.
Yeah.
Or whichever one you wanted, you'd have to ring their code.
Oh.
Like it'd be three short rings or a long ring and a short ring, you know, like that sort of thing.
To signal who you...
Yes, and they were the ones that would pick the phone up.
Oh.
There used to be a lot of... others pick it up for a listen too.
I was going to say, those telephone exchanges especially, where you used to literally put people through, people must have become addicted to listening in on other people's phone calls.
Oh, well, yeah, I think they did.
Yeah. You didn't do anything like that?
No. Oh, no, I didn't do anything like that.
So... I mean, there's always something fascinating behind every person, and often there are things that you don't always expect when you meet someone. You kind of sometimes do these sums and go, oh, you know, she seemed like this sort of person, he seemed like that sort of person. Alan, I was actually going to read a little something to you and see if you knew what I was talking about or whether you just thought I was crazy. But I'll just describe. Imagine if you closed your eyes and I was reading a little description, and the Righteous Brothers was playing in the background. Do you know what I'd be referring to?
No.
The movie Ghost? Come on, because we know that you're the secret master potter. And that movie and that scene pretty much put you guys on the rock star list, didn't it?
Yeah.
Tell me about your... Oh, thank you, Mary, for passing me an amazing book called The People and Works of Canny Ridge Pottery. Is this you?
Yes. On the front?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And what years was that? Was that 70s? It looks 70s.
Yeah, but 70s. Yeah, 70s. Yeah, and it was written by our granddaughter, who's a lawyer.
Oh, isn't this beautiful? A beautiful book of, oh, wow, of, oh, look at your pottery. Wow, what an extraordinary book. How did pottery... and then mastering it and then opening this Canny Ridge Pottery Centre. How did you become this person?
Oh, well, I started at the Bendigo Pottery when I was 13.
Was that something like it that your parents took you to and said, why don't you do some pottery classes? How did you...
You didn't?
When I left school, I was only 13 when I left school.
Oh, right.
And anyway, when I went down to the Bendigo Pottery, my father took me down, actually, and he knew the manager. And anyway, Dad said to him, can you give this chap a job here? And he said, he looked me up and down, and he said, well, I'll fit him in somewhere. So anyway, I went in and I was working with another potter.
Yeah.
Getting the clay and that ready for him.
Yeah.
So how did you end up for
how long?
I'd done that for a number of years, till I was about 16.
Yeah, the making shop at the Bendigo Pottery closed down. That's why he left it back then.
Yeah.
And he came back to it in the 70s, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Built his own pottery.
What's it about pottery and the art of making it and the final product. What was it about that that really just you connected with?
Well, I was just always interested in that sort of thing, doing something with clay and that sort of thing. When I was a kid, I used to go over the hills and, cut things out with the knife and all that sort of thing, figures and
That
sort of thing. Yeah.
Do you ever think you had a past life as a potter?
What's that?
Do you think you ever had a past life as a potter? Because really, potters and master potters are really the link to history and with the ages. I mean, that's what is unearthed and then dated back and gives us insights into the civilizations that were around. Like, it's a very ancient art.
Oh, it is, yes. He was recognised as one of the best throwers in Australia.
What do you mean? Oh, a thrower as in the clay. Oh, that makes you emotional, Alan. What's it about that makes you so emotional? Just that recognition?
Nothing, really.
No? Just
time.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of so much time passing, a reflection?
Yeah, a reflection, I suppose, and looking back at just how good he was.
Yeah.
And he used to train young potters.
Does that kind of blow you away a bit of how amazing you became in that?
I don't think he realised how good he was.
Yeah, it seems like that.
No, we had about 20 working for me at the Canning Ridge.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're the art and craftsmanship that you ended up falling in love with became actually this beautiful. I mean, you then passed on and became the master and teacher to so many other people that went on with the legacy. And as I say, pottery itself is something so ancient in civilization.
Oh, yes,
so, I mean, how many things can you say? I mean, will they be sitting around in, 2,000 years uncovering smartphones and going, oh, isn't this amazing? But they do that with pottery and we can tell, it's...
Well, there was a lot of good potters around in that time. The old chap that I was working with, he was the best potter I had ever seen.
Really? And what makes an extraordinary potter?
Oh, well, knowing how to get the shape of they gave him an order to make pickle barrels or something like that.
Yeah.
But
I'm just looking at a picture of the pickle barrels there, which were also, I remember this room very much in the 70s. Everyone had a pickle barrel. Yeah, they were very fashionable,
weren't they? They're pickle barrels. They call them, they don't call them. I used to make them in the canister sets, actually. But you have two gauges, and one for your height and one for your width.
Yeah.
And that's all you got. And you had to make the shape into that. To those
and doors. What was the key to getting it?
I don't know. It was just one of those
just
things.
Skill, I think.
You learn and you make a lot of mistakes when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it? Did you find, I would imagine it's quite therapeutic because there's something mentally quite, I mean, it's interesting too, almost I do believe in the future the millennials of our age will probably have to seek out a lot more things to ease their mind because I think the effects of smartphones and constantly being stimulated on a number of different things will have its impact, and something as beautiful as pottery surely must be channeling your mind and your spirit in a really sort of beautiful way.
It's a great relaxation, actually.
Yeah.
I always, you sit behind a wheel and work away and you sort of, that's all you got in front of you just keep on going, making all these things.
You'd make 100 coffee makes a day.
Is that right? Really? Wow. Do you miss those? You miss it, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Thank you.
But Mary said 100 coffee makes a day.
Mm.
No, that'd be like...
It's a wonderful book you've got there.
Yeah, it's a lovely book. Yeah.
Can you buy? Can people buy that book? Is that sold somewhere?
No. Well,
it was just put together for you guys.
When it was printed, the printers charged $40 a copy for it, so it was never anything you could sell. Like quite a few people have bought it, but we've just kept a few.
That's my son, there, that one.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he did all the painting and that.
Yeah. Amazing.
What else was looking for?
Tell me, when the movie Ghost came out and you saw that scene, did you look at it and think, oh, they don't know what they're doing? Did you critique it, Alan? The very famous scene in Ghost when they were sitting there being all romantic. Oh, no, well, the ghost is behind her and she's doing the pottery. Are you thinking, oh, you don't know what you're doing, these guys are hopeless?
I don't know about a ghost. That's sugar basins I was making there.
You made lots of sugar basins.
Yeah.
Lots of things that, you know, lots of things that I'm sure were popular items that have changed over time in terms of, you know, even just the fact that a lot of people, not as many people even have sugar on the table anymore, where everybody, you would never go.
Casseroles, it could be.
And people had casseroles and they don't do casseroles so much anymore, they? It's all very... Yeah. It's you know, a lot of raw food that if you put that down on someone's table, you know, back, you know, when I was growing up and this time when I'm looking at the book, you're in the throes of your master pottery, people would have gone, this is rabbit food. We're not eating this. Are you trying to say we're eating this, you know? Well, I'm coming to the end of my little visit with you because I've actually got to catch the train and go back to Melbourne. But I want to just quickly ask, whatever comes to mind, but the two of you together for 68 years, what wisdom can you share quickly on how to keep lasting love?
Mary? I don't know, just agree with one another, I suppose, which you don't do sometimes.
Mm.
You've got to love each other.
You've got to be soulmates, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the love, that love doesn't...
Doesn't die.
It doesn't expire, does it?
I think love is the main thing.
It's only true love.
I'd like to thank Freedom Aged Care for introducing me to some of its wonderful residents for this series, who together have lived a million years of life. To find out more about Freedom Aged Care, head to freedomagedcare.com.au.